You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. Whoa, oh, oh, oh. The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17 to 10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Welcome along to The Punt Podcast. Lee Phelps back in the hot seat again. I think basically what's happened is DK has just said, look, these guys can't tip for toffee. I'm not going to be associated with it anymore. The guys in question, Derek McGovern and Andy XL. Unfair to you, Andy, because you did actually put up a winning nap last week, I think, but I didn't read it out. You both well?
Yeah, you know, I'm on fire when I'm not on.
Ain't that always the way, Derek?
It is. I chipped in with my obligatory loser last week. But at least one thing I say about my loser last week, it lost in style, didn't it? 4-1 West Ham against Man City. Possibly the worst nap in a long list of crappy naps I've done this season. I'm actually getting quite proud of myself.
We've got the Premier League games to look through with Derek and Andy, of course. We've got Jeremy Wilson coming on in the FWA section. We'll chat about the Player of the Year awards. We'll chat about Liverpool in the Champions League, of course, and lots more. We've also got the guys looking at the Championship, League One and League Two, final weekend for the Football League, and we'll have a Euro nap as well. All to come in the next 40 minutes or so. Let's start on Friday night in Brighton. Where else would you want to be? 8 p.m. kickoff. It's Brighton versus Manchester United. Mourinho's men need a win to be assured of second, but I guess that's only if Liverpool beat Chelsea later in the weekend. It may well be that a point will do it. Really, probably the only FA Cup final is really on their minds as it stands at the minute. Interesting that, you know, they've lost at the last two times they've been to promoted sides this season, so they haven't got a great record. First time that's ever happened to Manchester United, so you wouldn't write off Brighton. Paul Pogba scored 3 in his last 4, so starting to find some form again at the right time of the season, i.e. when he's going to the World Cup. Brighton 4-1, the draw 13-5, 7-10 Man United away. Derek, 4-1, big enough for you?
No, because, I mean, they're playing a team that shouldn't be interested in United because they're probably going to finish second. And even if they don't finish second, finishing third, what's the default? None. But Brighton don't seem to want to win and don't seem able to win, more importantly. 7 matches now without a win since they went on that run of 3 straight wins around about early March, which seemed to catapult them to safety. They're still all, you know, they're still not safe, although it's going to take a mathematical miracle for them to go down. If I had my way, they'd go down. I'm going to argue that bottom 8 clubs should all go down this season. Also, probably Everton as well.
And Watford.
But Everton are just symptomatic of how bad this league is. They're in 8th. Goal difference of -12, Everton, and they're in 8th. Just get rid of all these teams, West Ham, Huddersfield, Swansea. We've missed them. I'm sick of them. So get rid of the bottom 8. This match... Pogba is coming into form finally. You've got to question what's happened with him this season, because he's been abysmal, and then all of a sudden with the World Cup on the horizon, he starts showing a bit of form. I tell you what, I've decided that I tell you two things when people turn up for work every week with a different hairstyle, like he does. One, they are vain, and two, they have hair, and they should be despised for both, I reckon. I love Pogba, but I've got no time for him this season. I think he's been... We might talk later on, Lee, about the most disappointing player of the season. He'd be in the top 3 without question. I think this is a nailed-on draw. Brighton are just doing enough by getting draws at the moment. The last three they might have drawn. And they'll see a point here as absolutely a cast-iron guarantee that they're safe. And when both two sides are playing and they know a draw is okay, because United probably only need a draw if they want to finish second, generally that's the way it finishes. So, yeah, all square for me.
Paul Pogba to score in a draw is... 16-1.
my nap this week.
16-1, Pogba to score in a draw. Seems a big price. Andy, which way do you go? It's a 7-10. You're trying to lure the punters in a little bit there on that Man United away price?
Well, if we are, I'd back it myself, I think. I think United will win this game. You get that saying, don't you, that teams have headed for the beach late in the season. Well, Brighton are closer than most to it, and I think they're already there. I think they think they are safe, and I think they have knocked off a bit. And I just think Mourinho still keeps his teams going out to win. And it's, you know, we've said it all season, haven't we? You don't want to watch it, but it happens. I think 7-10 is all right. I think they'll win.
Remember, hashtag your odds available on this game. If you want to get your own bet priced up, then just tweet at William Hill with the hashtag your odds, and the traders will do their very best to price it up. Acca 5 Insurance available, of course, as well. So if you're having your Acca over the weekend, if one leg lets you down in an Acca of 5 or more selections, you get your money back as a free bet. That's across the sports as well, not just in footy. Let's get into the traditional weekend of football, shall we? Starting on Saturday lunchtime with Stoke versus Crystal Palace. Stoke are 8-5. The draw is 23-10, and Crystal Palace are 17-10. My nap, can I have it now? 17-10 Palace to win at Stoke. You look at Palace, they've scored in 11 straight away games until they went to Watford, the last away game. Milly Jovovich has scored in 6 of those games. Obviously rattled 5 in last weekend as well. So Palace finishing the season in decent form. In fact, they're 6th in the form table going into this weekend. Stoke are second bottom of that same form table. You can't get away from the fact, Andy, can you, that if you're averaging 0.8 points per game throughout the season, nothing's going to change in the last 4 or 5 weeks. And in fact, what has changed is that's gone down. They're actually averaging less points per game right now than they have been through the entire season. Stoke doomed, no matter what you say about, you know, they need to win, Palace don't need to win. They don't seem to have it in them, Stoke, do they?
Yeah, mathematically, this is what I call the silly season, where you get into looking at, because teams need to win, they're going to win. Well, if they're not capable of winning, Why would they? So I'm kind of with your argument here about Palace. You know, you've got one team that's not enjoying themselves and one team that, for the first time this season, is enjoying playing football now. And they're actually looking forward to playing. They don't want the season to end, Palace. They've won 6 of the last 7 meetings against Stoke as well, which can't be coincidence for me. So I think you're right. I think 17-10 is all right. I fancy them.
Derek, which way are you looking on this one? 17-10 for this Palace team who like a goal?
I think that's a terrible price, the Palace price. I really do. I'm in the old school that says when a team has something to play for against a team that's got nothing to play for, you've got to be absolutely crazy to back the team with nothing to play for, especially at 17-10, which is giving nothing away. They've only won 3 away games, Palace, this season. That's not great, is it? I know that Stoke are poor. I mean, you know, I watched them last week at Anfield. And I went for both teams to score because I looked at Stoke's position and I thought, there's absolutely no way they can fart around looking for a draw here. They've got to go for it. And they didn't. They didn't. They just they celebrated the 0-0 draw like they got to safety. I couldn't believe their outlook. You know, you traditionally offer bookies more than 2.5 goals in an average Premier League game. Well, for Stoke games, they changed the word goals to attacks. It's just, they're awful to watch. And if they do go down, which is looking likely now, they'll look at that Anfield match last week and think, why didn't we just give it a go? Mm-hmm. Because even if they get 2 wins now, they might, you know, they could still go down, and they're not going to get 2 wins now because they ain't good enough for doing that. They'll get 1, though. They'll beat Palace. I can't believe that you two boys are going for Palace. This is a team that's got to be on the beach. They've been fighting. They've been on the brink of the relegation zone for most of the season. They're now in 11th place, safe from the drop. Why on earth will he go for it? It's been a long, hard season. If I was a Palace player, I'd go out wearing flip-flops. I would. There's absolutely no way they'll be up for it.
That says more about you, Derek, and the reason you didn't make it as a professional footballer than about these players.
I should have done.
Yeah, because you're in flip-flops all year.
I've told you the Peter Davenport story, haven't I?
You're in flip-flops all year, and you know, you just kept berating the goal scorer for scoring too many goals and not doing anything else.
That's probably right.
For any new listeners, regale us with the Peter Davenport story once more.
Oh yes, I played for Merseyside as a youth, and I was first choice central midfielder. My understudy in those days was a certain Peter Davenport. He wasn't considered as good as me, and then he went on to play for England, and I went on to play for the Red Lion
in flip flops. So Palace for Andy, and you're going Stoke then, Derek?
I think so. I think Stoke are overpriced here. Years ago, in a game like this, you'd get Stoke at something like about 8 to 11. Bookies would really, you know, go short on the team with something to play for. Those games seem to be over now.
It's called wising up, I think.
Possibly. And you'll see later on when I think Man City play. Is it Huddersfield this weekend? I've got something to play for, City, obviously. The Huddersfield are 25 to 1 of the biggest prices seen this season. I can't understand it. I'm not going to go for them, but I just can't understand it.
Let's have a look at the evening game on Saturday. It's Everton versus Southampton. Southampton, obviously, plenty to play for in this game. Everton sitting in 8th, as Derek mentioned earlier on. Southampton in 18th on 32 points, a point away from Swansea, 3 points away from Huddersfield Town, who have that inferior goal difference. And in fact, West Ham also have an inferior goal difference to Southampton as it stands at the minute. And they're within 3 points as well. So suddenly Southampton have got everything to play for in this match, going to an Everton team who, you know, if you're following Derek's argument, may well be on the beach as well. Everton 15-8 to win at home. The draw 11-5. Southampton are 8-5. The enhanced odds for this match, they're available for every game, by the way, but Wayne Rooney to score and Everton to win was 4-1, now 9-2. Charlie Austin to score and Southampton to win was 9-4, now 5-2. They seem to have taken your advice on board in this game, Derek, don't they, with the prices? A little more, possibly,
because Everton 15-8. Well, you look at them and you think, well, you know, we know how poor Everton are. But they've won 10 home games this season. That's as many as Chelsea have won at home. Only one feud in Tottenham and Liverpool have won at home. So, you know, they don't make that many mistakes at Goodison, apart from appointing the hippo head that they've got in charge now. But I look at them and I just, you know, my argument for the last game, ditto with this one. 15-8 Everton, in my eyes, it doesn't scream value. It screams back Southampton, because I will always, I've played in matches, and I know I'm only at amateur level, but, you know, it's the same thing, the same rules apply. When you've got nothing to play for and you're playing against a team that have, you think, I'm not chasing that ball. I know these are professionals and they're paid to do that, but we see it so often, teams give up when there's nothing to play for. I've got to go for Southampton here. I can't not go for them.
Andy, intriguing match, isn't it? You know, I think, you know, the way Southampton have attacked the end of this season, finally, you know, they had those two kind of, say, unlucky results, the Arsenal and the Chelsea games, where they gave it everything but came up against better sides. The draw against Leicester, and then the win against Bournemouth, which is obviously has breathed new life into this rescue mission that they're trying to mount. They've got Everton away, they've got Swansea away, and then they've got Man City at home. They've still got it all to do, but would you say a win is crucial here?
Well, yeah, it is for all of them down there now. We're into that argument again, isn't it? It's ability against desire. Well, there's a few things that I want, but I haven't got them. So, you know, I've got to go with Everton here. They've got that great home record. It's the last home game of the season. So players can't dish it in, I wouldn't have said, in front of that crowd in the last home game of the season. So I've got to be with Everton again at 15-8. Southampton have played better. They have, their form has picked up. If there's a team down the bottom who are showing signs, it's them. But Everton have still got to be favourite for this game for me, and they're not. So that's where I'll be going.
Yeah, just to bolster that argument, Everton have won their final league match at Goodison Park in 9 of the last 11 seasons, losing against City in 2013-14 and Tottenham in 2014-15. So, you know, Everton don't usually have much to play for at this time of the season. So, you know, obviously, you know, that crowd does keep them honest, if you like. The price is then 15-8 Everton, the draw 11-5, Southampton 8-5. Bet Boost available on every single Premier League match of the weekend on your mobile. You'll put your bet in your bet slip. You'll see a little yellow button. Click that and the price will get bigger. Let's go into Sunday, shall we? Man City are taking on Huddersfield. 1-12 Manchester City. 9-1 the draw. 25-1 the price for Huddersfield, who are, depending on Saturday's results, are staring at relegation in the face. And this is the last thing they needed, a trip to City, who, whatever you think, and I know Derek's view over the last couple of weeks has been that, you know, you can't back a team who don't need to win. But they are still going for it. Scored 9 goals in the last 2 games against much inferior opposition, both relegation threatened teams, and they're going into this game against the Huddersfield side, who, by the way, have still got Chelsea and Arsenal to play. All guns blazing, Andy. You can't go high enough on the handicap here, can you?
No, normally when I come to City games against teams in the bottom half, I'm scrapping around the handicaps looking for something. But I just think it's so one-sided, this one. I can't even find anything there.
Minus 2 is 8-13. You know, that's not too... You know, it's a 3-goal victory still, though, isn't it?
That's the one that stands out to me, because I think it's going to happen. But taking... You know, it's a little bit more than a shade of odds on... Can't quite get me on that, but if I was going handicaps, that's the one I'd be looking at. I think City have got their sights set on 100 points, I think. I think that's the new goal they've set themselves, to set them up for next season. They really want to keep going and keep everything rolling. So I don't think they are stopping. And if they are going to score a hatful in this game, then who's most likely to score? And Gabriel Jesus is the man up front. So him to score 2 or more is 14-5. So that's all right for me.
He scored in his last 4 appearances for City in all competitions. Interesting, Derek, this one. City haven't won a home league game against Huddersfield since November 1987. This is the first meeting since 1999, obviously. But that victory in 87 was 10-1. Yeah, that's the last time a side scored at least 10 goals in an English league match. So, I mean, you know, it's so rare to see it's almost derogatory to say that to Huddersfield fans. 10-0 is 300-1, by the way.
I'm on it.
You wouldn't back me 100-1. Salah, Ballon d'Or, and Liverpool to win and Egypt to get to the Liverpool Champions League, Egypt to get to the quarterfinals. You're not having 300s.
Yeah. Well, I don't care whether, you know, you say the league table doesn't lie. It does. It lies every season, and it lies here in making Huddersfield 16th, because Huddersfield, in my eyes, are the worst team in the Premier League. And I mentioned last week they were 5-1 to go down. They're not that now. And I still think they're in real danger. A, because of crap, and B, because they've got three real tough fixtures coming, this being the toughest of all. City should have given up. I said that 2 weeks ago, but they obviously haven't. They're going for records. I think they're at current speed, they're on target to get, I think it's exactly 100.70 points. I've actually backed them to do just that, by the way.
What's the over-underline on that?
Yeah. And at home, they're scoring 3.5 goals, on average 3.5 goals a game at home. 58 goals in 17 games is quite incredible. And they're playing the worst team in the league. So I can understand, actually, despite what I've said about teams giving up when they've got nothing to play for, City are clearly going for points and goals records. And -3, I'm going here for a piece. I look at Huddersfield and they're probably thinking one more win they need. They might even think a point is enough, but I don't. I think they'll need one more win. They ain't going to get it here. They're probably going to try everything to do it against Arsenal and hope Arsenal are in the Europa League final by then. But I don't think... I think this is like a gimme for them. I think this is... We're not expected to get anything here. We'll keep our powder dry for maybe Chelsea, maybe Arsenal to come. But yeah, City -3 for me. I think it'll be a cakewalk.
Yeah, Arsenal play tonight as we record this on Thursday morning. These records, victory here for City would set a new record for the highest number of points in a single top flight season in England, 96, currently 95 by Chelsea in 2004-2005. When converting to 3 points for a win, only Liverpool with 98 in 78-79 and Tottenham back in 60-61 have reached this many. City have won 13 Premier League games by a margin of 3 or more goals this season. Only 2 sides in top flight history have won more in a single campaign. Amazingly, West Brom back in the 1919-20 and Arsenal back in the early days as well. So so many stats at the break in. City have become only the 5th side to have with 4 different players to go double figures in a single Premier League campaign. It's unbelievable. There just seems to be record after record after record tumbling with this City team. So can't disagree with Derek or Andy's view on City versus Huddersfield at 1:30 on Sunday. Arguably the game of the weekend is Chelsea versus Liverpool. 4:30 on Sunday afternoon. 11-10 Chelsea, 13-5 the draw. The price for Liverpool is 9-4. Chelsea in 5th place on 66 points. Liverpool in 3rd on 72. Can still catch Manchester United mathematically, but by the time this game's done and dusted, Man United may well be assured of second spot. Obviously, Tottenham can catch Liverpool as well. I guess it's all about, you know, where the Liverpool mentality is after a tremendous midweek, Derek, where they completed the job that everyone thought they would do. There would have been some nervous energy expelled there. I'm sure there have been a few celebrations after the Roma win over two legs.
Well, yeah, when that penalty went in, you're looking, how long's left?
You didn't want Fergie time then, did you? I tell you that.
Well, I was actually thinking, you know, when I was, well, before that game, I thought if Liverpool go through here and you know, you fully expected them to, having watched Real Madrid toil the night before, I actually thought to myself, Liverpool could well be fine, could be favourites in the final against Real Madrid. And I think, I just wonder from Andy's point of view, being a professional odds compiler, had they been a little bit more impressive last night against Roma, Liverpool? Could they? And it's 8-11 evens, by the way. Real Madrid, 8-11 evens Liverpool to lift the trophy. So there's not much in it. Could Liverpool have started favourites, do you think, Andy, had they been more impressive in the second leg?
If they'd really blown them away, possibly. But I don't think it makes a lot of difference because it's when you're fixing the book, A, there's mathematics involved, and B, you're trying to put yourself in the mindset of the customer. What are they going to back? And I think you've got to pitch. And that's what's led to Real Madrid still being favourite. Names mean more than anything in most cases. So people think they've got the bigger pedigree, so they'd always be a marginal favourite, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 11-10 now, Liverpool as well, Derek.
Oh, is it 11-10?
Yeah, 8-11, 11-10.
Yeah.
There you go, it's already moved.
That's very, very fair, you bookies, aren't you?
21-10 to win in 90 minutes, 6-5 Real Madrid in the draw, 13-5.
Real Madrid are definitely beatable, aren't they? They look a shadow of what they used to be. I mean, they're very lucky to be there. Struggled against Juventus in the quarterfinal, struggled again against Bayern. I know they're hard opponents, but they don't look a proper team right now. So Liverpool will go into that final with nothing to fear. As for this game, I worry about them because I looked at them last night and they looked all out, dead on their feet. And I think, how can you recover for a game like this?
It's a skinny squad as well, Derek, isn't it, really? I mean, there's absolute quality in that first 11. But, you know, you look at if they had any problems with any midfielders last night, you know, any injuries or any sendings off, you'd have been a little bit stuck with that midfield. It's looking a little bit threadbare, isn't it?
It is. I was watching that game last night, and about 5 minutes from the end, I thought, I'm going to be lumping on Chelsea this weekend. Chelsea have still got it all to play for. And by the way, you know, Chelsea could actually finish fourth this season and still not qualify for the Champions League. Did you read that story this week? I don't know. It can only apply to Chelsea and Tottenham. Should one of those teams finish fourth? So let's just say Chelsea, for instance. Liverpool finish fifth. Arsenal finish sixth. Arsenal win the Europa League. Liverpool win the Champions League. You're only allowed a maximum of five teams from any one country. So the team finishing fourth in the Premier League will be axed. They won't get through. So Chelsea and Tottenham could finish fourth and still not qualify for the Champions League. Wouldn't that be incredible?
Yeah, if the players know that, I guess that rolls into the idea of what are they actually playing for apart from the FA Cup final then?
Yeah. Well, we'll know it more after the Arsenal game on the Thursday night, of course. Yeah, I mean, I just can't see Liverpool being able to get up for this game. And they need one more victory anyway to be sure of a top four place. They're playing Brighton at home on the last game of the season. They probably, if that was a Liverpool player, I'd think, oh, God, you know, we're going to win that one. That'll do us. I think Chelsea have got a free pass here.
Yeah, so you're going to have it's hard to argue against that, isn't it, Andy? I know we're kind of saying, you know, teams, what they've got to play for and all that sort of stuff. But for me, kind of, you know, travelling away for such a huge game, and then there will have been some celebrations. There have to be some celebrations after a victory like that. I think it has to take it out of you, whatever sport you're in, Andy.
Well, and along the motivational line, if you're a Liverpool player, what's going to define your career? If you're a Champions League winner or if you finish fourth in the Premier League in this season? So where's their mind going to be? It's all going to be on the Champions League final now. Prior to last night, if they hadn't got through last night, I'd have been putting something different up. But I think Chelsea are probably going to win this game now. And I think they might be shortening up before the weekend. I think that's where the money will go now, because everybody will think that. The stat I had before last night is 5 of the last 9 meetings between these two teams had finished 1-1. I still wouldn't rule that out, and it's 13-2 is quite big for a 1-1 as well. So that might be worth a go if Liverpool can scrap something out of it, but I think Chelsea are probably going to nick it. I can see the price shortening up before the game's played.
Yeah, I think you'd have to. I was just looking at the Champions League final, and arguably the same with this one, maybe less so, but I kind of almost ignore the 90 minutes and then just look at the match result and both teams to score for the Champions League final. Whichever way you go, and you surely have to add in the both teams to score element of it. And here it's Chelsea to win and both teams to score 3-1 at the moment. And as Andy said, as that outright price contracts, so will that one. The enhanced odds, Hazard to score and Chelsea to win, was 12-5, now 5-2. And Salah to score and Liverpool to win, should he play, was 3-1, now 100-30.
There's a real crunch match taking place in Germany on Saturday afternoon when Hoffenheim travel to Stuttgart, with both sides looking to book a place in Europe next season. Hoffenheim are currently occupying the last Champions League spot after a wonderful run of form which has seen them unbeaten since February, winning 6 and drawing 2 of their last 8 games. They're only a point clear of Leverkusen and host Borussia Dortmund on the final day, so they'll have to target 3 points in this one, and it's a similar story for the host this week. Stuttgart, who also have their eyes on a European spot, they're just 2 points behind Leipzig, who are in the final Europa League spot at this stage, and they have a very difficult game to close out the season with a trip to the Allianz to face Bayern next week. With Europe to play for and tricky games to finish the season for both teams, this should be a great watch. Stuttgart are unbeaten in 6 at home, but I'm going to chance the away side, who have been great to watch since going on this unbeaten run. They've scored for fun and let in a fair few at the other end too, scoring 25 in their last 8 and shipping 7. I think they're in irresistible form lately, and they look a sound bet at 21-20. But in the hopes of finishing the season in profit, I'll go for a slightly bigger bet, Hoffenheim to win and over 2.5 goals in the match. That's 17-10 and gets the nap vote in what should be one of the games of the weekend in Germany.
Chaps, it's time for the naps. Before we started today, Derek said to me, we really need a winner, don't we? There's 2 weekends left, Derek. You know, it's like me, you know, the missus giving me a job to do and me putting it off for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and then finally thinking, oh God, I've only got a day to order that thing before it goes or whatever. And then I go to it and it's gone. Yes, I think the answer to that is, yeah, getting a treble up now would be a lovely little fillip, wouldn't it, towards the end of the season. Just boost the coffers for the big matches at the end of the campaign. Who wants to go first? Andy, because last week, let me just fess up here. Andy, I was in Andy's role last week. I didn't cover myself in particular glory. Andy actually sent a load of notes over. I did nick some of them, but the ones I didn't read out was the nap, which actually landed. The best bet of the weekend, I thought though, Andy, was your Arsenal to score in that match at 7-10. I thought that was a cracking bet, and I did mention that one. But you go first, and technically you did have a winning nap. It was just my fault that I decided to let my ego overrule your knowledge.
Right, I'm going to take West Brom at home to Tottenham at 15-2.
Wow.
They found their form. They're still scrapping. They're not giving up. And I fancy they're going to get a win here against Tottenham.
Right, yeah, okay. Tottenham, the price for that is a very healthy 15-2. Derek, you can go next if you like.
I've just got to have a winner. I'm going to go for Chelsea to beat Liverpool.
Chelsea to beat Liverpool. Nice price that, though, 11-10, isn't it? And I'm going to go for Palace to beat Stoke at 17-10. Just under 50-1 at 47-1 as we record this afternoon. So very good. Thank you very much, Andy. A pleasure having your company on the Punt Podcast as usual. Derek, if you hang around, we're going to speak to Jeremy Wilson in a couple of minutes' time. Cheers, Andy.
Thank you.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Time for the FWA section of the Punt Podcast. Very pleased to welcome Jeremy Wilson, who's a deputy football correspondent for The Telegraph. Hi, Jeremy, you well?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. Derek's still with us as well. We're going to have a chat about Liverpool, just because we haven't done enough of that so far. But not just the Champions League, Derek. There's been stories around the assistant manager, Buvac, as being a potential Arsenal target this week. That Arsenal market is pretty volatile. We'll talk about it in a second, because Arsenal are one of the teams that Jeremy tends to cover in his patch. It would be an odd time to be disrupting the back room, wouldn't it, at Liverpool, when they're on the verge of such a fantastic achievement?
Yeah, it would. I mean, we're told it's personal reasons, but that covers a multitude of sins, doesn't it?
I'm not actually sure what he does, that guy. I mean, he just sits there in the dugout looking like someone's just run over his dog. I think Jürgen Klopp has him there, and he'll make his own hairdo look a bit more stylish. He's one of those guys. It was a bit like when Fergie had his two nodding dogs next to him, and he thought, well, what do those guys do? And then all of a sudden they got promoted above their status, and you realise not much in the end. I'm not sure what to think about it. Yeah, it fits, doesn't it? You know, he's been enticed by Arsenal. Arsenal need a new manager. He's spoken highly of by Klopp. It does fit, but there's so many instances of a number two being appointed as a number one and floundering. And I don't think Arsenal will go for him. I just can't see it happening.
No. What about this Arsenal manager position? Jeremy, from a bookmaking point of view, these markets are so volatile. Unless there's an appointment very quickly afterwards, there will invariably be about six or seven favourites in the market, and there'll be a huge gamble on someone, and then they'll drift away in the betting. There'll be another, and those huge gambles are usually sparked by a breaking news thing on Sky Sports News or something like that, or a story in the papers. Have you got any inside word for us that you can tell us right now so we can get a good bet on? Not to put too fine a point on it.
I think the explanation for what you've just said, it obviously is quite volatile, is that they are working through a process. And I think that it wasn't a situation whereby they had their man and that was it. Wenger was gone and the next day, you know, which is probably more normal, really, that you kind of know where a club's going, you know, where Chelsea have chopped and changed managers. Usually we've had a pretty good idea who it's going to be within a few months before the end of the season. They get Chelsea, another one where nobody's that certain this time, but that's unusual for Chelsea. Arsenal are committed to this sort of process and are sort of doing it in quite a old school sort of way, whereby they do want to meet people, they do want to speak to them, and they do want to do it in that fashion. So I don't actually think they have made their mind up yet. So that sort of explains why it's sort of bumping around quite a lot in terms of who it is. The best I can tell you is that a lot of the names that are out there that we know that they're interested in. There is the thing about Arsenal as well at the moment, because Gazidis sort of built this structure behind Wenger over the last 18 months, basically in preparation. There's different sort of power bases. So it's quite interesting to see what happens, because you've got Raul Senlehi, who came in, he was the Barcelona director of football. He's now got this title of head of football relations, who obviously knows Luis Enrique very well. Mm. And we're led to believe that he's pushing him. Then you've got Sven Mislintat, who was at Borussia Dortmund, who would obviously know Klopp's old number two, Buvac, very well from the time they worked together, but also the German candidates. Julian Nagelsmann, who's at Hoffenheim, has done incredibly well, a young guy. So you've got different, and then Gazidis himself, who was a big fan of Mikel Arteta when he was captain. That's obviously quite a leap to go for someone like him, but they were really impressed by him around the club and what he was like. And obviously he's been with Guardiola at Manchester City over the last year. So what it will also tell us about, I think, is who's kind of in control a little bit in terms of who's sort of won the persuasion behind the scenes. Ultimately, it'll be the owner, Stan Kroenke, who decides, but Gazidis will present the sort of candidates to him. But I think because it's not like at Manchester City where they built a sort of structure behind the scenes that was always going for one man, and they brought people that had worked with Guardiola before. And here, Gazidis has sort of picked out three or four people who are really good at what they do from different clubs, but who haven't all worked together. So, and now they're sort of all trying to pull together to decide on who the next manager is. So I think that there is quite a bit of debate within the club about which way to go on that. So I don't think it's finalised at the moment. I think until the sort of Wenger goodbye is kind of finished in terms of meaningful games, I wonder if they won't really sharpen what they decide to do, because they probably don't want that to overshadow
particularly while the Europa League's still live.
Yeah. Allegri is 3-1. Buvac is 3-1 as well. Carlo Ancelotti, 5-1. Enrique is 6s. Brendan Rodgers, 12s. Eddie Howe, 14. Joachim Löw is 16. 20-1 for Diego Simeone. Leonardo Jardim, Mikel Arteta, as you mentioned. Paulo Fonseca, Conte's 22s. Nagelsmann is 25s with Van Gaal and Patrick Vieira and many more. There's a huge list. Rafa Benitez down there, 33-1, Derek. I'm going to ask you for your unofficial manager of the year this year. Is Rafa... it'd be 1-10 with me for you to pick him.
Well, he would have been.
He's a Liverpool fan, there, Jeremy, but he's got a certain spot in his heart for Rafa.
Well, you know, it would be just a par for the course for him to win it this year for guiding Newcastle to what 11th to 12th, when he couldn't win it when he guided Liverpool to the Champions League.
To be fair, he'll be forgotten after May 26th. They'll all be forgotten anyway, won't they? Klopp will be the new messiah, surely.
Well, I was saying that, you know, if you win the Champions League with Liverpool this season, surely that's a far more impressive achievement than winning the league with Manchester City when the minimum spend is £50 million for a fullback. I mean, it's the greatest achievement there. But Pep Guardiola will win it. He will win it, obviously, because he's won the league and generally goes to the league winners. That said, recent winners have included Alan Pardew and Tony Pulis. I know you can't believe that, but it's true. Pardew's now out of football while Pulis is at Middlesbrough, so he might as well be. George Bailey won it, by the way, when he guided Ipswich to fifth in the Premier League. That same season, Gerard Houllier won a cup treble with Liverpool, and George Bailey got it for finishing fifth. It's madness.
That's the League Managers Association one, isn't it? Yeah.
It's the same one.
I think they tend to go a little bit... I think they look a little bit deeper, which we complain when it only gets given to the same person. To be honest, though, Derek, I can't believe you're complaining, because the other option probably would have been Fergie every year. So, you know, it's probably good.
That's true.
Who would be your unofficial manager of the year this year?
Well, I'm supposed to be... Yeah, I mean, it'd be hard to argue against Klopp if they do win the Champions League. And I think Guardiola is... They are doing something... I get all the things, all the money, but if they get 100 points, I mean, they are going to probably break the record for Premier League points. I think it's 95 at the moment, but Chelsea, first Chelsea team. So it's not a normal sort of Premier League title win. It's an absolute sort of smashing the field Premier League title win. I suppose, you know, the other ones you've got to mention is Sean Dyche, who's to get Burnley into Europa League, which looks almost certain to do, is a pretty phenomenal achievement. And, you know, and I'll stick up for George Bailey. I suppose it's a similar thing that he did at Ipswich as well. I think you can't sort of, on their budgets, you can't really dispute that, similar to doing what Klopp or Guardiola have done on their respective budgets. I think the other one I think that gets... I'm not saying he should be manager of the year, but I think he's sort of in the conversation, if Benitez is. I think that we kind of have sort of forgotten that Eddie Howe seems to guide Bournemouth to mid-table 3 years in a row, and it's sort of just accepted that that's what he does. You know, that's just... But to me, that's no less of a feat each time he does it. In fact, it's probably harder to do it third year in a row than it is the first time. So I sort of think he sort of lives under the radar a little bit now, because everybody was sort of talking about him when Bournemouth first came up. But I think he's more or less solidified Bournemouth in the Premier League at the moment. I think that's a pretty big achievement. And I'm not saying he's sort of ahead of the two or three other obvious people, but I think he gets a little bit ignored now, because it's almost normal for Bournemouth to be not in the relegation battle.
While we're talking about awards, the FWA Player of the Year was announced on Tuesday. Unbelievably, someone voted for Nick Pope. I'm praying it wasn't you, Jeremy.
No, it wasn't.
It's obviously Kevin De Bruyne or Mo Salah were the key players in this. Mo Salah edged it. Away from those two players, Derek, I'll let you go first on this. Who's impressed you most, and who's been the worst player? And this is going to be a long list for Derek, the worst player. But who's impressed you most away from Kevin De Bruyne?
Yeah. Well, no one. Those two, one of them impressed me, and it wasn't Salah. I mean, anybody who didn't vote for De Bruyne, and you might be included in this, Jeremy, hang your head in shame. Hang your head in shame. Because we saw what Salah was like. The performance Salah gave last night, and also the performance he gave against Stoke at the weekend, they're the kind of performances he's been putting in for pretty much the last 6 months. And he's escaped flak because he scored the goal. He scored a couple of goals. He's been diabolical. I'm a Liverpool fan. I've watched them, and I know I'm speaking in a minority of one, me. But I just can't have the man. I just can't have him. De Bruyne was the best player. He was the best player in the league by a country mile. He lapped the rest in brilliance. And how he didn't win. And come on, Nick Pope. Jesus. Come on, Jeremy. Who voted? Was it you? Tell us who voted.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I did vote for Sat. I was going to... I went through like three phases. I was like De Bruyne early in the season. And then I kind of had a thing like David Silva, I thought was sort of the a bit like Iniesta for Barcelona, was kind of the man who made City tick. But De Bruyne kind of got all the credit. So I was thinking, oh, maybe Silva deserves a bit more recognition. And then in the end, I just thought, well, Salah's goals were so phenomenal that it had to be him. So I went for Salah in the end. I left it quite late to vote, so maybe I wasn't watching Liverpool closely enough for all the rest of
well,
the
well, that's it. That's the thing, you see. Right? You know what?
We hear this all the time. You've gathered already, Jeremy, that Derek is on this crusade, this one-man mission to discredit Mo Salah's amazing score. But you can't. I know what you're saying, Derek, that, you know, De Bruyne's got this beautiful style about him, and he's obviously a wonderful, wonderful player. But goals win football matches. Mo Salah's goals have won umpteen matches for Liverpool this season. You can't get away
amazing.
From that.
I'll tell you what, Lee. You know when you go back,
You're like one of them West Ham fans who just, oh no, we're not playing the right kind of football. I don't want to win.
What, have a look at Mo Salah's goals this season, and have a look at them. Have a look how many were redundant, academic. And I've done these stats.
Have you seen your defence recently? No goals redundant when it comes to Liverpool. You never know if you're going to concede four. Even the fifth
man?
One might not be the right one.
Derek, who is the main man for Liverpool if it's not Salah? Is it Firmino or is
Firmino?
It
Firmino.
If Salah
even dreamed of being as good as Firmino, he'd have to wake up and apologise. Firmino is just—he's just different class. Firmino and Sadio Mane is three times the player Salah is, and it will all be proved next season. Mark my words, Salah is.
I can't believe you're looking forward to this being proved, right? This is the odd thing.
I am. You know what? Actually, I was watching them last night, and I'm thinking. I want him to mess up. I want Salah to mess up so people will know I'm talking sense.
I'm doing what you just told me to do and go back and look. And the second match I opened, I've opened three matches and he scored in all of them, Salah. The one of them was the middle goal in three against Bournemouth. Fair enough, you know. He scored the winner against Crystal Palace and he scored four of the five against Watford.
So he didn't count then, did he? He would have won anyway.
Firmino scored the middle one, so as long as Firmino, superb. Most disappointing. Who's been the worst player?
Mesut Ozil. He's just been a disgrace, but he's been a disgrace for like three or four seasons now, so no surprise to me.
I think Sanchez has been for the sort of fuss over his transfer. I think in I suppose if he does it in the FA Cup final, we suppose we can sort of maybe I'll have to sort of go back on my view. But I think for where Sanchez, the sort of, you know, he was sort of hailed by Man United as if it was like the sort of coming of a sort of a Ronaldo or a Messi into their team. And I think, you know, he didn't really do a lot for Arsenal before he went left, and he's sort of not done an enormous amount for Man United. So I think, sort of relative to where you'd expect them to be, I think Sanchez has been below Ozil this season.
Who
would you go for, Lee?
That's a fair shout. I think Ozil's a great shout, Derek. I think he's. The lack of effort that he consistently puts in. In fact, I'd forgotten about him until you just mentioned him then. Pogba, another one, he's been disappointing. Yeah. He's supposed to be the greatest, best player in the world. Yeah. You know, they're pretty obvious, those, aren't they? But yeah, I think when you look at Kane didn't get the top scorer. That's disappointing, isn't it? I'm joking. I'm joking, of course. I'm coming from Derek McGovern's school of thought there. But yeah, I'm just going to, I think... Ozil, though, just for his attitude. I mean, I might be completely wrong. He might be a lovely guy and he's really trying his hardest, but it doesn't come across like that on the pitch, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And he's like, you get a player every couple of seasons who's the press lord and say, isn't he one? Look at the way he plays football. And he's a myth. Well, Mesut Ozil is one of the greatest myths of all time.
There's many of those. The book, Derek McGovern's Mythical Footballers, will be out in all good bookstores for Christmas. Jeremy, thanks very much for your time. Been a pleasure having
pleasure.
You on. Cheers, Derek.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Pleasure. Cheers, Jeremy.
Jeremy Wilson there, the Deputy Football Correspondent from The Telegraph, part of the Football Writers Association. Go to footballwriters.co.uk to check out all the work from the body as well. Right, last weekend of the Football League. We've got the Championship, League One and League Two naps coming from Pete, from Gav and from Al.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries and we hit the final week of the Championship League season. And my nap for the final time in the league part of the season is 13-5 Ipswich. You might say, well, Ipswich have now lost Mick McCarthy. They've got nothing to play for. It's another nothing season with not great form. But this is the final day of the league season. And Middlesbrough have now confirmed that playoff place. Their focus, I think, from the sounds of it, looks towards their next couple of games rather than this one. They also have a very poor record at travelling to Ipswich. In fact, they've lost three of the last four meetings in Suffolk. And yes, they did win the last one 2-0. But historically, they do not do well on their travels here. So for me, 13-5 Ipswich to beat a Middlesbrough, whose focus will be elsewhere, is the nap of the weekend. Thanks, as always, for tuning in over the course of the season. It's time to pass over to Gav Puchalowski and his thoughts on League One.
So here it is. The end is nigh. The final set of fixtures in League One, all kicking off late Saturday afternoon at 5:30. And there's one team that jumps out at me. It's a very decent price, and that is Shrewsbury at 4-5 against MK Dons, who are down and relegated. Shrewsbury are in the playoffs. They are the third best side in League One this season, and they're 4-5 to beat the second worst side. MK Dons are going down with a real whimper as well. They've lost the last six games consecutively. It could be 7 defeats in 7. In fact, I think it will be. And MK Dons away from home lost 5-1 at Wigan, 4-0 at Southend, and 2-0 away at Bradford City. MK Dons have conceded 11 in 3, and Shrewsbury at home in their last two victories against Oxford and Peterborough have scored 6. MK Dons gearing up for life in League 2, Shrewsbury gearing up for the playoffs. Shrewsbury, my nap selection, minus a goal at 21-10. That is my play. Looking at the final day in League 2 is Al Ross.
Might be the obvious pick, but their price has already rocked in from 4-6 and will keep getting skinnier by the day, if not the hour. Coventry and Morecambe, well, it could play out a mutually beneficial draw, but that's also short. And even the recent Crawley Goals project is in jeopardy, given they are playing Mansfield. But the other half of last week's Obers Goals project involving Crawley was Crewe. Now, Crewe won and both teams scored. Also last week, the team Crewe are playing this weekend, Cheltenham. They scored in a heavy 6-1 defeat. The week before that, Cheltenham also lost. That was 4-3. Both teams to score has landed in 11 of Crewe's last 12. Over 2.5 goals has landed in 11 of the last 12 as well. Last 5 games involving Crewe, 19 goals. Last 12 games, 44 goals. And Cheltenham, they also have this goals habit. 14 in their last 2, 30 in the last 7, 41 in the last 11. Last day of the season, nothing to play for. The tendency at that point is always for home sides to give a little more for their home fans, and no one is expecting anything from this Cheltenham side anyway that shipped 10 goals in the last 2 games. I'm not sure form is necessarily the key on the final day of the regular season, but Crewe do have 3 wins in 4, the other was away at Luton, and Cheltenham have 5 defeats in 6, the other was at home against terrible Morecambe. So all the signs are that Crewe should not be 7-5 on the outright. That's remarkable enough a price. The traders slow to price up these matches this week. If it is available, then Crewe to win and over 2.5 goals would be the nap at what I'd expect to be about 5-2. If it's not available, there is nothing wrong with 7-5 on a Crewe win.
Thank you very much to the Football League experts there. Of course, they'll be back with us through the playoffs as well. Thank you to Derek McGovern, thank you to Andy XL and to Jeremy Wilson for a very entertaining FWA section this week. I don't know if Dave Keller will be back next week. One of us will be hosting the punt, but it will be back for the final weekend of Premier League action. We'll be here through the World Cup as well, of course, so lots to look forward to. In the meantime, if you enjoy the podcast, please, all we ask, tell a friend. You can download the podcast at audioboom.com. You can also go to iTunes and all the other podcast providers and download the podcast there. Subscribe and it'll drop into your phone or your PC every single time we release one. All the offers are available at williamhill.com and on the app. You've got Bet Boost right throughout the weekend and every Premier League game. You've got hashtag Your Odds. You've got enhanced odds on every match. And of course, you've got the Acca 5 as well. Plenty to get stuck into then. If you haven't bet on any of the Premier League action this weekend, very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.